Well, Geography Awareness Week 2019 is November 10th through the 16th, and it's put on by the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences. And Alan Arbogast is the chair of that department. He joins us on MSU Today. Once again, Alan, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Russ. This is always fun. Thanks for having me.
And joining us on the phone in just a minute, Yoruba Richin, who is the keynote speaker for this year's Geography Awareness Week. So, Yoruba, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, Alan, why don't you start by telling us, what is Geography Awareness Week? Why is there one needed?
It's a national event that's celebrated by academic departments to some variable degree nationwide. In the past 10 years or so, we've sort of taken it to heart and really tried to make a big production out of it. We feel that we need to really promote the discipline of geography and its relevance to societal needs, issues, concerns. We're one of those disciplines that people don't understand particularly well. You don't need to have a business awareness week or an economics awareness week, but geographers are different. Most folks, lay people, sort of associate our discipline simply with maps, knowing the location of things, names of the longest rivers, mountain ranges, those sorts of things. What are the countries of the world? I've actually had parents of students go, how can my child get a job knowing the capitals of the states? The discipline involves so much more, and it's so highly relevant in many ways. Location theory, where do you put businesses and all of the different factors that are involved, remote sensing of the earth, monitoring climate change, environmental applications, you name it. Health, there's great background in health medical geography, the distribution of disease and how those vectors move across space. And so we are using this week to kind of get the word out a little bit better.
And Alan, you usually bring in a prominent keynote speaker for Geography Awareness Week. And why Yoruba this year, and what attracted you to Green Book?
Well, you're right. We've been doing this, you know, like I said, for several years, and we've had a range of people that have come in and spoken to our groups. They've ranged sort of across the discipline. One year we had a woman by the name of Roberta Bondar, who happened to be the very first Canadian astronaut. She was on a shuttle mission in 1992, and she talked about how understanding the Earth from space and geographical patterns, the expansion of cities and whatnot across the globe, the impact that is having on the environment and how that could be observed from space in her mission. Last year, we had Bill Weir, an acclaimed reporter with CNN, who has a show called The Wonder List, which is about places folks should go to before they disappear because of human impacts. And the idea has been to bring people in who are doing great geographical work, who may not necessarily be aware that what they're doing is clearly within the wheelhouse of our discipline, talk about it and think about how it actually applies to geography. I actually, a couple of years ago, maybe a year and a half, I saw the movie The Green Book, which was out in theaters and widely acclaimed. And I was curious about the film. It was about the relationship between these two people. One, a white fellow from New York who drove a concert pianist, African-American man through the South. And the movie was largely about the relationship between the two of them and the kinds of things they encountered. But for a moment in time, there was a little flicker in the film about the Green Book, and I became curious about that, and I wanted to know more about it. When I did learn something about it, I realized it's just fantastic cultural geography about places where African Americans could go during the Jim Crow era, where they could be accommodated, feel safe, welcome. And I'm thinking, this is great cultural geography. It would be an excellent addition to our program. I reached out to Yoruba, found her, realized she had made the documentary, and here we are.
Well, so Yoruba, tell us a little bit about Green Book from your perspective. What motivated you to produce the project and sort of how you feel it fits into Geography Awareness Week?
Absolutely. Like, I just have to say that it's so funny how everything, you know, circles around in your life. I actually, before I embarked in documentary film, I was in urban planning. I got a degree in urban planning, which, of course, crosses over into the geography realm. And while I was studying for that is when I became aware of the geography field at UC Berkeley, where I got my master's. And I was saying to myself, I remember at the time, many years ago, I was like, oh my gosh, this is such an interesting field. And as Alan just talked about, intersects with so many other disciplines and so many other disciplines and how we look, and so important to understand what geography means in terms of understanding our community. I was a community development concentration in urban planning, so understanding our community, understanding our world, and understanding culture. So it's really, I'm really excited to screen the Green Book. So how I got started in this with this film is actually I had never heard of the Green Book until a production company came to me that was interested in doing a project, doing a film about the Green Book. And I was immediately intrigued because I hadn't heard about the Green Book. And, you know, I'm someone who I thought I knew my African American history pretty well. And this was an aspect that I did not know. But I was immediately intrigued because I did not know. And when we began to develop the film, seeing what the Green Book was, and also what stories you can tell by looking at the Green Book and at its creation and at the places within the Green Book, and how that, how there are so many layers to it. It wasn't just a book, but it really told a history and a story about so many things. And one is about how African Americans went to safe haven, built these safe havens where they during the era of Jim Crow, but it wasn't just in the South; it was all over the country. And that was one of the immediate things that I knew I wanted to tell. It was not just in the South where Jim Crow was official, but it was in the North, in the East, all over in the Midwest, all over the country. And in fact, the Green Book was the man who created it was from New York, and the initial listings in 1936 of the first book were in Manhattan, in New York, and places that we were not, that African Americans needed places within New York City and Harlem, where he was from, to go, because there were places that we were not allowed to go at that time. So it's a really fascinating look into community, into the rise of middle class, into cars, the importance of cars, and what it meant to African Americans. I mean, I could go on and on. So,
well, Yoruba, when you speak at Michigan State University on November 14th, are there a couple of messages you hope the audience takes away?
Absolutely. One is, I think that the main thing, the main, as we call in documentary film, premise of the film is that I want the audience to take away. First of all, I want them to feel what it was like to travel at that time through these different time periods that we explore in the film. But the main premise is that though the Green Book was created out of a necessity for safety and for places that would serve us, that we were discriminated against, when we were being officially discriminated against, and also places of safety, because that was, a real aspect to traveling the roads during that time, places that we could go and be safe. But though it was born out of that necessity, it soon became a place, a book that also listed and helped foster communities where we went for recreation and pleasure. So very soon after the first Green Book was published, it became the Green Book Guide to Travel and Vacations. And so a big part of the film is looking at these places that we created, that African Americans created for vacation and leisure. And so, that's really one of the things that I want people to know, that though it was, created from times that were scary in a lot of ways and were discriminatory, it also produced these communities of recreation and pleasure, which have always been part of our history.
Well, I just can't wait. We've communicated by email quite a lot since an initial conversation last spring. This is just such great human cultural geography. We think in terms of themes in our discipline. One of them is location, of course, and it simply is where things are located. But the question that geographers want to know is why are they located there, and what are the factors that are making those places possible? A second theme that we have in our discipline is movement, how things move around. I study sand dunes. I study the way sand moves along the beach in Michigan. But it's not a big stretch for me to think about how people are moving, how they're planning their movement to go to one safe place or a recreational place or another. And to think about that in the cultural history of African-American people in the country, especially during the Jim Crow era, which was so tough, it's just fascinating to me. I thought the film cut it really short. I mean, the original film, I was like, I saw it in the back seat for a second. And it made me really curious. And the fact that Yoruba is going to come here and talk about it is just awesome.
So you say cultural geography. How much does cultural geography play in, you know, in terms of what you teach and what goes on at Michigan State? Is that a discipline or a field that you guys study at the university?
Sure. We have we kind of think of it as human cultural geography. We used to have a class called cultural geography. Now it's called human geography. They're sort of one and the same, really. Mm-hmm. And we have people in our department who do that kind of work. And you know, one fellow, Kyle, he looks at human geography, opium production, and locations of opium production in Turkey. Mm-hmm. We may be bringing someone into the faculty here in the next year or so. Who would be looking at urban planning and urban development, the kinds of things that you would be interested in. So it's that is a big part of the discipline. We're in the College of Social Science, which, mm-hmm. You know, where people are studied big time, and we fit right in there. So
right.
I'm curious, when you're talking to our group in Q&A, given your experience in urban planning, how would you be thinking about how the film fits within a geographical context based on your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the sort of breadth that geography that the field of geography entails is, you know, really, really answers that question. You know, looking at where communities lived and worked, and you know, also a big part of the Green Book's growth was the Great Migration. Migration, right?
Yep.
So how the policies of, and that's what I was interested in, you know, way back when in urban planning, how the policies of government play out on the people, play
right.
out on communities, and either, you know, can contribute to negatively contribute in terms of, you know, discriminatory policies, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that this film, you know, it's only 51 minutes, so it's short. We put a lot of history into it, but I think it can really spark further investigation of how, you know, going deeper and also looking at today and how these policies that affect our geography and these communities affect people today. And we're still dealing with the, you know, with the results of that. You know, the big part of why the Green Book was needed even after Jim Crow was redlining, right?
Yeah.
And where Black people could, African Americans could live and you know, buy housing and those places of businesses that grew around these segregated communities. So, and again, that's something that we're still looking at today. I just think it encapsulates the experience of so many communities here and across the world, of course.
Yeah, that's great. One of the things that we're really trying to do, I mean, at a fundamental level, what we're trying to do is we're trying to promote the discipline in a way that students, undergraduate students, might look at what we do differently and think, you know what, I might be able, that sounds really interesting, I might be able to get a good job. And certainly, if you're working in the area of urban planning and policy with a spatial awareness, there are lots of good jobs to have out there. Mm-hmm. And that's at rock bottom. That's what we're trying to do, is just to, turn students on to thinking about things a little bit differently and go, hey, you know what? Geography might be the place for me to go. But beyond that, we're just trying to raise the profile of the department around the university to make people realize that we're doing some pretty cool stuff.
You're here.
Absolutely.
Well, Yoruba, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to continuing this conversation. And those joining our conversation can learn more about how the Green Book teaches us about cultural, political, and historical geography and the civil rights movement when they come to the Passant Theater at MSU's Wharton Center, 7 p.m., November 14th, 2019. No charge, open to the public. It's the keynote piece of Geography Awareness Week 2019 at Michigan State University. Again, Yoruba Richin has been our guest, and Alan Arbogast, who is the chair of the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences at MSU, the proud presenter of the program. Yoruba, thanks for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you here soon.
I'm very excited. Thank you for having me.
I can't wait to meet you.